Hello and welcome to Knowledge Engage, the podcast of the University of Nottingham's Institute for Policy and Engagement. The Knowledge Engage podcast is an opportunity to explore with our researchers the work they're doing and the difference it's making. I'm Stephen Meek, Director of the Institute, and I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Elvira Perez Vallejos, Associate Professor of Digital Mental Health at the University. Elvira is a psychologist but now works in multidisciplinary teams exploring the impact of technology on mental health, and in particular that of young people. So welcome, Elvira.
Thank you, Stephen. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I want to focus today on your work on the Unbiased Project, which is its longer name is Emancipating Users Against Algorithmic Biases for a Trusted Digital Economy. So we will call it Unbiased. Also how it's helped influence government policy on age-appropriate digital design. But before I do, perhaps you could say a bit about your research interests and history and how they led you to this space.
So I've been always interested in understanding how technologies can help humans. And I'm always interested in understanding how specific technologies can help a specific more vulnerable populations. And children, young people, older adults, they don't like to be called vulnerable. But from a research point of view, that's what we do. And I'm very interested to look at ways so we can maximize the benefits and minimize the harms. So over the years, I've been looking at different pieces of technologies, and I'm interested in bringing awareness to the general population, specifically vulnerable groups, of how they work and what happens behind these pieces of technologies. And I've done research. I started with something as simple as hearing aids and looking at satisfaction in older adults. But that was the beginning for me to understand how can we design technology, putting the user at the center of that design process to ensure that the technology is serving to the user, not to someone else. And from that learning, I keep moving more to the digital arena, digital economy. And now I'm very interested in all the new digital interventions for well-being and mental health, which again are becoming extremely successful. And I feel that sometimes clinicians and designers, they do not have a deep understanding of what happens to the data that the user is creating and is being either stored or shared. And there's no awareness about all that. So that's my main focus and my main research interest, to bring awareness and to ensure technologies are kind to the users.
That's really interesting. I mean, one of the things that strikes me, and partly from my previous position working in policymaking, is for a lot of people, particularly those of us who aren't digital natives, we tend to assume that technologies operate the way they do because that's the way they have to operate and we need to cope with them. And one of the things that struck me about the work that you do and Horizon, one of the university research teams you work with, does is that actually it says, well, we're making choices in the way we design platforms. You know, it's not that platforms just have to be taken as a reality. I think that's so interesting. I just wanted to ask a bit as well. Obviously, you've trained as a psychologist, but you're working with some, you know, quite deep experts in technology and computing. How has that been?
Well, multidisciplinarity, cross-disciplinarity, transdisciplinarity is needed so urgently because, as you said, machines, platforms, the way they operate is not just the responsible person, is not just the computer scientist or designer behind. There are so many different elements. And if you don't have a team that is aware and value all those different elements, the user experience, what happens with the data, how can we situate that technology in people's lives, in people's homes, schools? Where is that technology? So we don't understand the deployment and the real use of specific technologies, having different voices, different perspectives, different backgrounds and knowledge and areas of expertise. That's why, for example, in Unbiased, a main focus was to bring the voice of children and young people to the forefront. And we use the word emancipating. It's quite a powerful word. And that was a very deliberate. We wanted to bring awareness and be a bit of an activist movement, because what we felt when talking with children and young people is that they are very interested in the data, in their privacy. However, they sometimes lack the knowledge, the digital literacy, the tools to manage and make informed decisions. So unbiased, the focus was to understand what is it from a child and young people's perspective, what is it that they are concerned about when they access the digital world? And most important, which are the solutions and recommendations they bring? And we translate all that into documents, briefings that were easy for policymakers to engage with. And that's the job that came in collaboration with Five Rights. The way we wanted to frame this piece of research is we need to engage and involve as many experts in including the users, and in this case, children and young people.
That's really interesting. So, and you moved us nicely on to the Unbiased project. So perhaps you can say a bit about the project and, you know, what it is that you were seeking to investigate. And perhaps particularly interesting is what was it that the children and young people were telling you? And did any of it surprise you?
I was surprised sometimes where I found young people that knew more about data privacy than I did. And I remember learning and engaging in really fascinating discussions. And what I've noticed also is that a group of young people are actually not interested. But when you engage them in a conversation that they find for any reason relevant and related to their experience and their everyday life, that's when they understand why online data privacy is so important. So Unbiased wanted to do two things: break barriers. So how can we engage with young people? How can we make this not fun, but as a topic that they would like to engage? So we created this, we adapted what we called citizens juries into a different format called youth juries. So we engaged with, that was a collaboration with Leeds University. So we asked young actors to perform scenarios that were fictitious but very plausible that illustrate which were their main concerns. So again, we start with a co-production exercise where it's young people telling us actually this is what bothers us or what we are interested. So we play that scenarios, which again, play, theater, all this is more entertaining than a video. So with that scenarios, that was our prompt, that were our excuse for them to say, actually, I like this, I don't like that. And we were very explicit about your opinion is important. We're going to take your opinion very seriously. So something that kept repeating was how intrusive, how sometimes they felt that because of the notifications they were receiving on in their mobile phones, they felt that the concentration and their attention was somehow stolen without them having much control. In the night, they were hearing the pings, they had to check their phones, they were over-engaged in a way that they knew was not healthy. That was a main concern, and they wanted a solution. But also a different problem was how difficult it was for them to read terms and conditions. What are cookies? How cookies can affect my personal experience? What is personalization? So once we explain them what cookies are, which are basically a little bit of software that lands in your computer and starts tracking you at many different levels, sometimes extremely intrusive, they were like, I mean, what can I do to protect my personal information? Because I wasn't aware that someone was making money for telling them what I did yesterday. So because of those concerns, we started again writing what they recommended, solutions. And we're really proud to say that actually the age-appropriate design code, which actually is becoming law this November 2021, that has contributed. So all the online services not designed for, but accessed by. So for example, WhatsApp, that was never designed for children, but children use it. So all the terms and conditions that are from platforms that are accessed by children and young people, that now is changing. They have to be much more transparent. They have to give you in bullet point basically what they are doing. And I don't know if you've noticed, but now you have more options to change your cookies. It's a bit more user-friendly. You only need to either accept all, but if you reject, they give you the minimum intrusive settings. So there are lots of different changes happening because this initial work, and as probably you're going to check now, is also how we engage with Five Rights, which they basically give us the voice to come into Parliament and to actually change things, because the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office, they made this amazing exercise to understand what is it that we need to change from the way we design technology that is being accessed by children to ensure that children's rights online are protected. Because think we may look back in 10 years or 20 years and we will be horrified. We've been treating children online as any other user. We don't sell cigarettes to children. We don't give them alcohol, but we treat them the same online. That's wrong.
That's really interesting. I mean, actually, you know, reflecting on myself as an adult, the terms and conditions aren't really very user-friendly for us as an adult, you know, so that the benefits from focusing on children probably flow into adults being able to manage online presence a bit more effectively. Perhaps you could say a bit about the work then with Five Rights and how you then moved into helping shape decisions on this.
So Five Rights is an organization led by Baroness Vivian Kidron. She's a woman I admire. She's so charismatic. She's actually a filmmaker, and I think that's an excellent attribute to have because she's fantastic at storytelling. And that's something I think researchers underestimate, how important it is to tell your story in a way that is engaging and is going to resonate with you. So Five Rights were very interested in gathering evidence from children and young people. And our project Unbiased fit perfectly what the goals, their agenda was. We share output, we share data. They also help us to shape our research questions. So they were, it was beneficial for us researchers, but them as activists. So through a series of consultations, we, in collaboration with ICO, Five Rights, managed to make this amendment of, in this case, was the Data Protection Act in 2018, to add this specific age-appropriate design codes, which, as I said, it will change so many things. And I have two children, they are 10 and 13, and they already told me that the way TikTok and the way Instagram, so their experience is changing. And I keep saying, well, this is partly because some of the work mommy is doing, and sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't. But it's so rewarding to see that our research is having a real impact in the way personal data from children is being treated differently. So the experience with the Five Rights was fantastic. We are still collaborating with them after how many years? We started in 2014, so that's a good 7 years. So we also have a PhD student that is doing some of the internships and collaboration with them as an external non-academic partner. Actually, he is doing, Ephraim, he's looking at the way terms and conditions are presented, and he's looking at which formats are more engaging and also provide more transparency and more intelligibility. And as you said, all these advances in how we present these complex law and policies, because we as adults, we also like to read things that are more manageable. So it will benefit all of us. And we start with what we consider the more vulnerable.
I think I just wanted to pick up that point you made about the importance of storytelling and getting your point across. And I think, I mean, there's two sort of things here. I think sometimes researchers can be a bit nervous about thinking in terms of stories because, you know, you're getting into the realms of fiction, whereas actually what you're trying to do is engage people so that they engage with the evidence. But the second dimension perhaps we can focus on is the world you're dealing with isn't a world of black and white. It's complex. It's grey. It's not that, you know, online life is good or bad. Online life is a reality, and we have a series of choices we can make in both the way we design it and how we manage our experience of it. And I wonder if that sort of storytelling approach actually helps in engaging with a more complex, less black and white set of issues.
Well, my personal experience when talking with, for example, psychiatrists or parents, is that because the way our brain works is that we prefer a simple answer, and that simplifies things and it takes away so much uncertainty around the world we live. So a very typical question is social media, is it good for children or is it bad? What I feel now the narrative is in the current state is still very polarized. We have researchers saying actually it's like television, it's fine. And others are saying actually it's damaging, it has contributed to a rise specifically in depression and anxiety in teenage girls. So what we seem to miss is all the spectrum in between. And to articulate all that infinite possibilities is basically not plausible. So I guess an important message to have or to be present is that we are still in the infancy of what the digital economy is, and we are making lots of mistakes. And at the same time, we are learning quite rapidly about what seems to work when and how. And from a research point of view, that we are very interested is trying to get that gray scale messages out there. And as you said, the storytelling behind is so important because it's so complex that you cannot overwhelm policymakers. Otherwise, they're not going to know where to start making changes or who to. But at the same time, you cannot reduce it as it is now, because then we are going to miss the granularity and the sensitivity of many of the things are happening. And so this is something I keep thinking, say, how can we ensure that we don't deliver a black and white message, but at the same time, we are able to basically break this massive issue, which is the role that children play in the online world in a way that is easier to manipulate and to learn, basically.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I want to come back to, you know, where are the next challenges? What are the future things you're going to work on? But I wonder if there are any sort of lessons that you might have to other people who are trying to engage either in this space or to engage with policymakers in changing the law. Are there any things you've learned, any things that you look back and you think, oh, I'll do it a bit differently next time?
For us, engaging with Five Rights was a very important point to ensure that whatever we were doing had more impact. The Institute You Direct is a perfect platform because you can provide, you can facilitate that engagement with these policy. Who are the policymakers? Yes. The way we think policymakers are, I don't know, entities that are impossible to touch. So it's not just networking, it's engaging with those that are either working directly with policymakers. Yeah. Or they know how to do it, because I think there is so much to learn. And again, what I'm seeing more and more often is research teams that maybe they are based in computer science, in Horizon, but they have a policy officer or a policy expert that can help us to. And I think that role is needed. Mm-hmm. We cannot expect everyone to know about everything. So my advice to anybody that is interested in influencing policy is to engage with the Institute, but also to ensure that you have a budget that can pay for some of the time of a policy, basically a person that understands how to change things. And then at one point you may be able to learn and do it yourself, but we should not aim to do everything by ourselves, otherwise we just break.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice. I mean, both the plug for the Institute, which I hasten to add, it wasn't scripted, but also that thing about finding the partners as well. Who are the people who have links, who are the experts in making the connections and in whom you can work with, knowing that the integrity of your research will be protected. You know, you need to be careful who you choose as partners, but it just sounds like you and Five Rights were a perfect match. And as a result, you had a lot more impact than might otherwise have been the case. So finally, I just wanted to ask you, so what next? What are the next things that you're looking at in this space or in others?
So the next step for me is to ensure that the responsible innovation angle spreads across not just Nottingham University, but any group that is engaged in developing new technology or thinking about any, well, user interaction with tech. Because what I feel is that the speed in which technology is being developed is extremely fast. There is no time to reflect about the consequences. There is no time to engage with those that may be affected. And I think there is time to not to slow down, but to bring that reflective exercise that we seem not to have time. In the area of digital mental health, what I see is there is a rise in there's so many apps to reduce stress, to reduce anxiety, to increase social connectivity. There is an app for everything. And I worry that we have reached a saturation point where the effectiveness of most of these apps hasn't been tested. It works only for specific groups that we exactly don't know who they are. And the credibility, the trust on those digital services is going to decrease. And what worries me is that there's a push to be online, to go online for everything, but I don't think the services are ready yet, so I don't get why we have to push and create that urge that I don't think is healthy for anyone, and it can actually cause more harm. We actually received a very, actually, yeah, it's not been announced, so I cannot say. But there's upcoming lots of really interesting opportunities to maximize the benefits of digital mental health services. My next step is how we do it so it's trustworthy.
Brilliant. Alvira, thank you so much for appearing on the podcast. It's great talking to you and hearing about the amazing work you've done, which will both benefit children and young people, but I think also those of us who are adults and are too lazy to read through terms and conditions as well. So thank you very much. Thanks to everyone for listening to the podcast. In the notes to the show, there'll be links to Alvira's work so you can find out more there. Thank you.